Italy's former Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi has died.
At 86 years old, Berlusconi was Prime Minister several times over the 1990s and early 2000s, ending most recently in 2011.
Plus, preparations are underway in Florida ahead of former President Donald Trump's arraignment.
According to the mayor of Miami, they are working on a security planning, not only for the court, but the surrounding areas. As is expected, that many people will be planning to come.
And a report finds that more than half of youths engaged in child labor are involved in work that poses a danger to their health. Today is Tuesday, June 13th, and this is VOA's International Edition. Good morning. I'm Steve Miller in Washington. Italy's former Prime Minister Silvio Berlusconi, the brash and flamboyant billionaire tycoon who became a conservative political icon at both home and abroad for decades, has died. Reuters' Matthew LaRotonda starts us off.
Berlusconi had been suffering from leukemia for some time and recently developed a lung infection. He died at this hospital in Milan on Monday. At 86 years old, Berlusconi was Prime Minister several times over the 1990s and early 2000s, ending most recently in 2011.
Un saluto affettuoso.
And even though he no longer had a role in government these days, his death is likely to destabilize Italy's political scene. His political party, Forza Italia, is also one of the members of the right-wing coalition that governs Italy.
Matthew LaRotonda of Reuters News. Newly released video shows the moment four siblings were found in the Amazon jungle after going missing for 40 days. The children's experience began when their plane suffered an engine failure and crashed in the middle of the dense Colombian jungle. Christina Casado-Smith narrates this story.
Video released by the Colombian government shows the rescue of the children who had been missing following the plane crash that left three adults dead, including the pilot and the children's mother. Public television station RTVC Noticias broadcast the video showing local indigenous guards and the Colombian army holding and feeding the children. The youngsters were found between the Colombian provinces of Caquetá and Guaviare. The minors, including a baby who turned 1 year old in the jungle, had been missing since May 1st, when the Cessna 206 plane carrying them crashed in the Colombian Amazon. Their grandfather, Fidencio Valencia, celebrated the moment he was reunited with them.
I just saw my grandchildren and first they are alive. They are very exhausted, but I know they are in good hands in the hospital and I know that it's going to turn out well.
Army General Pedro Sanchez told reporters about the call he received informing him the children had been found.
I am simply the voice of my army, of the indigenous people, who walked in an adverse web in the middle of the jungle, step by step, 2,556 kilometers. That is like walking from Bogota to Lima, Peru. At 5:15 p.m., the commander from the Special Forces, Brigadier General John Katoa, reported to me, "Miracle, miracle, miracle." That's the key word we gave to this operation.
Under the name Operation Hope, at least 11 aircraft were used in the search. More than 150 soldiers from the Military Special Forces Command, 73 indigenous people, and a Belgian shepherd dog participated. Leslie is the 13-year-old who helped keep the kids alive. Authorities say she kept them moving forward, camping, caring for her baby sister, and fighting for the nutrients and food she needed to survive. Colombian Defense Minister Ivan Velasquez described the moment he met Leslie.
When the older girl arrived yesterday after midnight, she began to ask to turn on the TV to watch children's shows. And when we arrived, she was precisely in her bed watching TV.
The four children are recovering at the military hospital in Bogota, where they arrived with signs of dehydration and insect bites. But so far, they are recovering. For Camilo Alvarez in Bogota, Cristina Caicedo-Smith, VOA News.
Former U.S. President Donald Trump flew to Miami on Monday to face criminal charges of unlawfully keeping U.S. national security documents and lying to officials who tried to recover them, in a case that so far has powered rather than hampered his re-election hopes. VOA's Celia Mendoza reports from Miami, Florida, where later on Tuesday, Trump will surrender himself to authorities.
This is the Wilkie Ferguson Jr. Federal Court building in the Southern District of Florida, the location where it's suspected that on Tuesday at 3 p.m., the former president of the United States surrendered himself to authorities. This after the Department of Justice was able to guarantee an indictment that was approved by a grand jury in this district of 37 criminal charges against him, and also one of them against Gualnada, one of his collaborators, also named on the indictment. According to the mayor of Miami, they are working on a security planning, not only for the court, but the surrounding areas, as is expected that many people will be planning to come to protest against and for the former president of the United States, who after the arraignment here in the court will go back to New Jersey, where he will be giving a speech during a campaign event. I'm Celia Mendoza for VOA News in Miami, Florida.
The International Labor Organization is calling for stepped-up action to eliminate child labor, which is rising globally for the first time in 20 years. Lisa Schlein has the details.
Latest figures show 160 million children, nearly 1 in 10 worldwide, are engaged in child labor. Half this number are working in the most hazardous forms of child labor that can pose a threat to their physical and mental health. The International Labor Organization reports an increase between 2016 and 2020 of more than 8 million children working in hazardous conditions, such as working with heavy machinery and mining. ILO Assistant Director General Manuela Tomei says it is worrisome that so many children are being left behind in an era of rapid advancements in achieving social justice and legal protections for people.
Over 244 million children and young people across the world are still out of school. This dramatically impairs the future opportunities of these children to access decent employment and good standards of living in their adulthood.
The ILO reports conflicts, natural and man-made crises, and the COVID-19 pandemic have plunged more families into poverty and forced millions more children into child labor over the past few years. It reports Africa has the largest number of child laborers, with more than 72 million, including 31.5 million employed in hazardous work. It says Asia and the Pacific rank second highest, adding all three regions together account for nearly 90% of the children working globally. Nobel Peace Laureate Kailash Satyarthi led a global march against child labor 25 years ago to protect and promote the rights of children. He spoke at an ILO event Monday to highlight this year's observance of the World Day Against Child Labor. He told delegates social injustice and discrimination are behind soaring rates of child labor in Africa.
Today, when we are sitting here, my dear sisters and brothers, 10,000 African children are entering or pushed into child labor. And the total number of child laborers in Africa is more than the total number of children in Europe. This is unacceptable.
Satyarthi noted the last three decades have shown child labor can be eliminated if the root causes of poverty are addressed. He said a group of 45 peace laureates are calling on nations to provide an additional $53 billion to tackle the problem. This extra money, he said, could provide education, health care, and protection for all children in the world. He said $53 billion amounts to less than 10 days of global military expenditure, which Satyarthi said is not a big deal. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
We're also following these other stories from around the world. U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken said Monday that China conducted an upgrade to its intelligence collection facilities in Cuba in 2019. Blinken told reporters that when the Biden administration took office, It was briefed on a number of sensitive efforts by Beijing around the world to expand China's overseas operations for collecting intelligence. Thousands of Sudanese refugees who fled to Chad to escape the fighting in their country could be cut off from humanitarian and medical aid during the approaching rainy season. More than 100,000 people have fled across the border to Chad since conflict broke out in Sudan in April, and the numbers could double over the next 3 months. Iran on Monday said it has continued indirect negotiations with the United States through the Sultanate of Oman over its nuclear deal and a possible prisoner swap. This is VOA News. VOA's International Edition continues. I'm Steve Miller. Recent clashes in northern Kosovo between Kosovars and ethnic Serbs are raising concerns about a possible new conflict in the region. Anna Rice narrates this story, brought to us by Valentina Vasileva.
Escalating tensions between Kosovo and Serbia could delay Kosovo's future integration into the EU, according to U.S. Secretary of State Antony Blinken. This after ethnic Serbians living in northern Kosovo rioted in response to Kosovo's decision to install ethnic Albanian mayors in the primarily Serbian-populated region. The Kosovo government sent the armed police that used tear gas and stun grenades to disperse crowds. Serbia sent troops to the border with Kosovo. Member of the European Parliament Viola von Kramon-Taubadel criticized Kosovo's response to the clashes.
To put the heavy armed police forces on the ground is clearly a decision of Pristina, it's clearly a decision of the government, and I think that in the end was a huge mistake. So is that endangering the entire process? I would say it will, of course, not help. And it damaged and ruined a lot of trust.
Taubadel is referring to the work of the Joint Monitoring Committee to oversee the implementation of a deal brokered in April between Serbia and Kosovo. Under the agreement, the Kosovo government will allow the ethnic Serbian population of northern Kosovo to manage themselves. And the Serbian government promised not to interfere in Kosovo's attempts to join international organizations. The deal is meant to expedite the integration of the Western Balkans into the EU, but renewed tensions have put the agreement at risk.
The compromise which we had end up now is obviously not sufficient, does not serve the interests of the people on the ground.
While European officials try to mitigate the conflict, Russia's Foreign Minister Sergei Lavrov said that rising tensions in Kosovo may lead to a huge explosion in the heart of Europe. Alexander Levchenko, former Ukrainian ambassador to Croatia, says the developments in northern Kosovo benefit Moscow.
Their goal is to have a conflict somewhere else, preferably in Europe, and divert the attention of Europeans and Americans from Ukraine. That would also allow Moscow to gain political points, presenting itself as a peacekeeper.
Ervin Foire with the Center for European Policy Studies agrees.
And there's no doubt that in these recent developments of unrest, that you have malign forces, Russian groups, who are fomenting and trying to exacerbate the tensions.
Experts believe a speedy accession of Western Balkans into the EU could help solve the problem.
This is the only way to guarantee some long-term stability within the European Union and in its nearest neighborhood.
To help ease tensions, NATO officials are moving an additional 700 troops to the region, and U.S. officials have disallowed Kosovo from participating in ongoing military exercises in the region. For Valentina Vasileva in Brussels, Belgium, NRI's VOA News.
A U.S. defense official tells VOA the United States is providing up to $325 million in additional military aid for Ukraine in a package that's expected to include Stryker and Bradley armored vehicles that can replace those damaged or destroyed in the Ukrainian counteroffensive currently underway. The official spoke to VOA on the condition of anonymity ahead of the package's expected release on Tuesday. Ukrainian Air Force pilots also say that they are eager to learn how to fly F-16 fighter jets and use them in combat against Russian forces. A coalition of nations, including the United States and 8 European countries, are partnering to expedite the training. VOA's Miroslava Gangadze spoke with some of Ukraine's battle-tested pilots about what's to come.
Since Russia's invasion, Ukrainian fighter pilot Rostislav Lazarenko has flown more than 330 sorties. He completed his first one on the first day of the war.
We didn't know what to expect. We were going after the column of 700 military vehicles coming from Crimea. When we made the plan on paper and walked toward the plane, my partner pilot Sasha said, "I am afraid." I am also afraid, but we must do it. Who will do it if not us? This is our faith, I said.
By the morning of February 24, 2022, Lazarenko, with his partner, had destroyed the largest Russian military convoy from Crimea. But Sasha died when his plane was shot down. Lazarenko flew through the cloud of flames, but survived. Since then, the 28-year-old has gone to battle against the Russian invaders almost every day. He says his fellow pilots are poised to master the high-performance F-16 fighter jet and join him in the fight.
Knowing my team, knowing Ukrainians, I know when they will go for training. While we fight here, they will not rest. They will do everything in their power to master new planes as soon as possible and come back.
Fighter pilot Oleksiy, who did not give his last name for security reasons, is fighting shoulder to shoulder with Lazarenko.
F-16 will be break advantages of Russians fighters of Su-35 because F-16 will increase the engagement distance, and we will have ability to destroy enemy in the occupation territory of Ukraine.
They may have to overcome language differences, but Oleksiy says Ukrainian pilots already know a lot about the F-16s.
About some aircraft systems, about some flights, techniques, I think it's not a big deal for our pilots because, as our teacher says, you have to feel an aircraft, and they think feeling of aircraft in Ukrainian language, in English language, will be the same.
They have started training using flight simulators, says Ukrainian Air Force spokesman Yuri Ihnat.
The touch screens are all in the F-16. You need to understand how it works, like a child playing a computer game. Likewise, the child learns it step by step. It takes some time to adapt.
Ihnat says the trainees are ready to go.
Dozens of pilots have been identified and will go in waves, possibly to different countries, and aviation engineers who will service the equipment. They are those pilots who already know English, young pilots, and are motivated.
Ihnat says the Ukrainian pilots need about 4 months of training on the F-16s, 2 months less than previously sought. Even though much work lies ahead, they are eager to meet the enormous expectations they face in Ukraine and beyond. Miroslava Gungadze, VOA News, Warsaw.
And finally, New Zealand Prime Minister Chris Hipkins said on Monday that he would lead a delegation to China. It's the first since the start of the COVID-19 pandemic. The two countries have an established trading partnership. The New Zealand-China Free Trade Agreement came into force back in October of 2008. Phil Mercer rounds us out.
New Zealand's exports to China are worth more than $12.8 billion, or a quarter of the country's total export earnings, according to government data. New Zealand Prime Minister Chris Hipkins said the bilateral relationship with China was one of his country's most significant, wide-ranging, and complex. Hipkins will travel to 3 Chinese cities on an official visit later this month. He told reporters in Wellington Monday that it would be a significant visit.
Today, I can announce that I'll be leading a major trade delegation to China at the end of this month, with stops in Beijing, Tianjin, and Shanghai. It'll be the first prime ministerial level visit to China since the COVID-19 global pandemic began, and New Zealand's first prime minister-led trade delegation there since 2016.
Hipkins said the trade delegation would also include representatives from the education and tourism industries. Before the COVID-19 pandemic, China was New Zealand's second largest source of visitors behind Australia. In January 2023, it ranked seventh, according to official statistics. But a recovery in the sector is expected now that New Zealand's borders have reopened. Hipkins also said he was keen for New Zealand to diversify its trade with China.
The export of traditional goods like dairy, meat and wood to China are incredibly important, but it's also very critical that we throw our support behind emerging sectors like gaming and health and wellness.
Hipkins didn't confirm if he would meet Chinese President Xi Jinping, but he did stress that he would raise human rights concerns with Chinese officials when appropriate. He also urged Beijing to help bring Russia's illegal and unjust war in Ukraine to an end. The New Zealand Prime Minister, who leads a left-leaning government in Wellington, said he would also attend the NATO meeting in Vilnius, Lithuania in July. Phil Mercer for VOA News, Sydney.
And that's going to do it for us today. This has been International Edition on The Voice of America. Until next time. I'm VOA's Steve Miller in Washington. Be well, be safe, and have a terrific Tuesday.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
The population of sub-Saharan Africa is projected to double by 2050, according to the United Nations. That poses urgent challenges in terms of food security. In early May, the U.S. State Department's Office of the Special Envoy for Global Food Security organized a panel discussion during the Aim for Climate Summit to discuss the vision for adapted crops and soils, otherwise known as VACS. The initiative, launched in collaboration by the U.S. government, the African Union, and the UN's Food and Agriculture Organization, focuses on the development of climate-resilient seeds and improvement of soil health to boost agricultural production. Today, agriculture faces an historically unprecedented combination of challenges, said U.S. Special Envoy for Global Food Security, Carrie Fowler. Building food security really depends on our addressing all of these challenges. The panelists were some of the foremost experts in numerous fields affecting agricultural production, including Professor Linda Majele Sabanda, Chair of CGIAR System Board, Commissioner Joseph Asako from the African Union Commission for Agriculture, Rural Development, Blue Economy, and Sustainable Environment, Dr. Cynthia Rosenzweig from AGMIP and the Columbia Climate School, Lisa Safarian, President and Chief Operating Officer with the agricultural technology company Pivot Bio, and Dr. Robert Reiter, Head of Research and Development in Crop Science at Bayer. Food security depends on addressing the fundamental aspects of having fertile soils and crops adapted to climate change, noted Dr. Fowler. Yet what we find all over the world, and certainly in Africa, are depleted soils. Our crops are not sufficiently prepared for climate change. Our institutions are not sufficiently prepared. We forged a partnership with the African Union and the Food and Agriculture Organization, but also with many others to try to address this particular issue, said Dr. Fowler. Pivot Bio is pursuing a fascinating approach to providing climate-neutral nitrogen to the roots of our crops. Bayer has a very serious analysis of what ails us and is engaged in a wide range of scientific and philanthropic activities. Cynthia Rosenzweig is working with us from NASA and from Columbia Climate School on new climate modeling so we can better understand how the important nutritious crops for Africa will fare in the current and future climates of Africa. At the most fundamental level, those challenges in food security really depend on our having fertile soils and depends on having adaptive crops adapted to climate change.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.